Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org, this is the Soundcheck Podcast. This is a soundcheck session from our archives. Those archives go back 20 years, but this session is slightly more recent. It's from 2017.
There's a blackbird sits on yon tree. Some say it's blind and cannot see.
From the studios of WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is the Soundcheck Podcast. I'm John Schaefer. For more than a decade now, the folk singer Sam Amidon has been taking old songs and making something very new out of them. But his latest album is something different. It's a collection of new songs. Oh, there's bits and pieces of older material in there. But The Following Mountain is a collection of Sam Amidon original tunes, and he's here in our studio to play some of them. With electric guitarist Gray McMurray in tow, they're going to begin with a song called Juma Mountain.
Shots were fired from the darkest moments. Like a child speaking to a stranger. Shots were fired from the darkest moments. Like a child speaking to a stranger. Thank you.
The song is called Juma Mountain from Sam Amidon from his latest album called The Following Mountain, although that was a live performance with Gray McMurray helping out on electric guitar. Both Gray and Sam are repeat offenders when it comes to our studio. Sam, welcome back.
Thank you. Great to be back.
So explain the title, Juma Mountain.
So when I made this album, we brought in some beautiful musicians to play with us. Us being sort of the core of the recording, which was Shahzada Smiley and Leo Abrahams. And one of them, which was very impromptu, was just later on in the afternoon, I sort of heard through somebody that he was in town, Juma Sultan, who's a wonderful percussionist. He's best known because if you look at any pictures of Jimi Hendrix playing at Woodstock, the dude in the bongos off to the right is Juma Sultan. He played in the Experience for about a year. But also, what is less known about him is that he also was very, very active in the loft jazz scene of the 70s and played in both as a musician and as an archivist. And that he has a huge archive of photos and film footage from that era. And so anyway, he's just a beautiful spirit. And he came in for just a brief period of time and we did some improvising and we took some of his percussion as the basis for what became this song.
Well, it seems like improvisation both at the beginning of the process and during the process was a key part of the making of these
songs. Yeah, it was a crucial thing. I knew that I had a few little elements, you know, a couple of guitar riffs here, but basically I was starting in a way from zero on this record. And I had a strong feeling, like I've made the five albums of reworked folk songs, which often start in a similar way in the sense that I often start with guitar parts or start with my own musical elements and bring the folk songs in. But I kind of felt like I didn't have anything to do with folk songs at this moment. And I knew that if I tried to do that, it would feel contrived in a way that it has never been for me. Mm-hmm. And that was the last thing I would want for those records, because it's very important to me on those albums that, you know, that it's been a natural process and it's happened because it wanted to. And it didn't want to this time. And so I just started from zero and I really didn't know what to do. But fortunately, there's people like Shahzad who are just very creative and open. And so we started with a day of improvisation. Juma was one part of it, and a very important other part of it was the drummer Milford Graves, who people will know from his work with free jazz icons like Albert Eiler and Sonny Chirac in the 60s, and from his own work, his own solo stuff.
And so the track April, which is this big extended, I mean, is that from the original improvisations?
That's like the last 12 minutes of a couple hours of straight up like wailing with Milford and a saxophone player named Sam Gendel.
So it sounds like you didn't set out to write a whole album of original songs.
I didn't know what it was going to become, no. I just did that day. In fact, the initial day of sort of improvisation with Milford and Juma for a minute and Shahzad and Sam Gendel really was almost more for me than for anything else. It was just like, let's play and not worry about end result,
right?
But do it in a beautiful studio, Shahzad's Figure Eight Studios in Brooklyn, and see what goes. And at the end of it, I knew that I would have something from there that would go on the record. Like, I knew that April track would go on the record. But the surprising, and I knew that I would try and make songs of some kind. I really headed without any end game. But then, luckily, the next phase was going to London, where I live, and working with Leo Abrahams, who's a really wonderful producer and musician. And he is sort
people,
of...
People will know his work with Brian Eno.
He's sort of a protege of Brian Eno's, in a sense that he played with him a lot and sort of gathered some of his ideas, Eno's ideas about just games that to spark your, you know, musicality or creativity. So Leo was very unfazed by me coming in, you know, without songs, although I did, as I said, have some elements. I had some guitar parts and stuff. And Leo really helped me kind of take little cellular bits of our improvisation and then sort of task me with, like, bring this back tomorrow, see what you can make of it.
Right.
And I would come home, and that's when I really wrote the melodies, the sung melodies, and the, you know, came up with words and just made the record, really.
Well, one of the interesting things about it is it's, as you say, it's not one of the five albums of reworked folk songs, but it certainly has allusions to that.
Certainly, yeah.
And even in the song you just played, I mean, there's this there's this dichotomy between very pastoral imagery, the colored leaves falling, and very unsettling imagery, shots were fired.
Yeah, you know? And that's very, you're right. And what you said, I mean, that's a very murder balladish technique, you could say. And yeah, I'll never escape, nor would I want to, the experience I've had with those songs, you know. And I wasn't like putting some arbitrary rule either. I mean, there's a tune on this record called Trouble in Mind, which the melody, you know, the central melody that happens in the middle is adapted from an old Kentucky Fiddle tune. And, you know, there's other lyrical elements, a song we'll do in a little bit where, you know, there are a couple songs definitely where a lot of the lyrics were coming from folk songs. Although I didn't take any melodies from folk songs.
Right, but the phrase, what a voice, in the song you just played.
It repeats in a folk song later in the record.
Repeats in the song Blackbird.
Nice catch.
Yeah.
You've been listening closely, John Schaefer. The close listen.
But you mentioned Trouble in Mind, and, you know, I wanted to ask you about that because it's an instrumental piece.
Mm.
And you, as a musician, whether writing your own songs or recreating and recasting old ones, you've been a storyteller. How different is it when there is no narrative?
I think it's possible that it's more different for other people than for me, because I really grew up as a fiddle player, and I sang in the background with my parents, you know, at community things, but like I didn't ever identify myself. Well, I did identify myself as a singer when I was 8 and I was like a boy soprano, but once my voice dropped, I really stopped singing. And I was Amal in The Night Visitors. I mean, you know,
really,
Nico Muehly,
the Giancarlo Minotti opera.
Nico and I share this experience. We were both Amal in our childhoods.
That's Nico Muehly, the composer.
And so anyway, so I really was a fiddler growing up. And the singing happened almost accidentally about 12 years ago now that I started doing that and singing these songs. And so for me, I it's an important thing in terms of this album in general, which is that, you know, this is an album of original music. I'm singing on the record. I'm playing instruments. But I still don't think about this album in connection with the term songwriting. Like, I really think of that as something that is not really my zone. Like, I know other people who care deeply about songwriting, and for them, their heroes would be like Leonard Cohen or whatever, you know. So there's singing on this album, there's words on it, there's instrumental phrases, there's weird rhythmic grooves, and however you want to call it, it's totally fine.
The album's called The Following Mountain. It's on the Nonesuch label. You're first for that prestigious label that your parents were on, what, back in the 70s?
Yeah, they're on the album Rivers of Delight, a classic record of shape note music from 1978.
Yeah. Well, so the circle has turned. Sam Amidon with us here in the studio. There are numerous times during listening to this album where I caught myself thinking, wait a minute, I've heard that before. And this song you're going to do for us next, called Warren, is one of those moments.
Yeah.
The English composer Henry Purcell, back in the 17th century, set whatever this text
is. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
I know the text because there's a text that much of this, not all of these lyrics, but almost all of them are taken straight from this old poem. And I knew it because it's also a shape note song called Warren as well.
Okay.
Which is in one of the shape note hymnals. And Warren is a town in Vermont, so it probably was named after that town.
Right. A lot of those shape note hymns were named after places. And it also, isn't it the case that melodies and texts could
Yes,
could
they
flip,
have a thing where it's, say, common meter or, you know, and you can move them around. And this one, so the poetry is from this old English poem, but I'm going to have to check out the Purcell.
Henry Purcell,
when I go home today.
Yeah. Well, this version is called Warren. You'll find it on Sam Amidon's album, The Following Mountain. Let's hear a live performance. He's got the guitar in hand. Gray McMurray with guitar as well, live on Soundcheck.
Sleep down easily, come close thine eyes, tired with beholding vanities. Da 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 da. Sleep down easily. That drives away the toils and follies of the day. Da da da. Some sure support, some sure support against despair. The flame is low, the lamps burn low. The end of a train of thought. Da-da-da. An empty till the morning flower. With each declining year.
Sam Amidon on vocals and acoustic guitar, Gray McMurray on electric guitar, and the song called Warren. I'll repeat what I said earlier, only now in a different context. What a voice, what a voice. You do that, something very similar to that, on the record, where it starts as a kind of a vocal fry thing, a little, and then it like expands into this Tibetan Buddhist monk kind of thing.
It's a combination of shape note singing training and trying to see if my lungs are still in shape.
Yeah. Shape note hymns, I mean, that's a very kind of open-throated, it's sort of a rough-hewn form of American singing that was common in the 19th century.
Yeah, and what's beautiful, I mean, I grew up singing it, and it's, you know, it's a big community thing, and it's been a continuous tradition. It never needed or had a revival. It's always, the book's always been
in New England,
and,
yeah.
In the U.S., because it survived in the South, and then it did restart in New England. But it's beautiful because it's choral music, but instead of the traditional goal of choral music, which is to sound like one voice, everybody in the shape note room is just like in their own, they're singing their own like super intense full voice. It's a different concept of blending.
Right.
And yes, it's a great form. You know, it's good to go to one if you can.
Have you been listening to, you know, Central Asian overtone singing or anything?
I love
like
those Tuvan dudes, but I've never tried, I've never gone for it myself.
You're getting pretty close at the
end of that
song.
I'll have to jam with them because they also have an instrument which is very similar to the banjo. So next time maybe I'll come, it'll be my duo with some Tuvan person. In terms of the album, like when I discovered free jazz as a teenager, and that's why part of Milford being on the album is very meaningful to me as a connection to that moment, is it was actually the same moment that I really discovered Appalachian folk music. Mm. And as a kid growing up, I was really into Irish fiddle tunes, which, you know, is a very ornate and comparatively a sort of gentle and ornate form on the whole. And to me, old-time Appalachian stuff sounded really scratchy. I was like, these guys can't play. You know, I'm into the Irish stuff. I was like, as a 13-year-old. The free jazz music, the intentionality behind them making this very raw music is sort of what allowed me to actually really like appreciate old time music, which had been around in my life, but I just never quite, because I just saw that scratchiness of the fiddle player as something different, as something that was, you know, a real sound that they were getting that was very powerful and meaningful.
So one of the funny things about this record was I'm hearing, you know, all these elements of jazz and even, as you say, free jazz in what wants to, in my mind, be a folk record.
Totally, yeah.
And yet somehow it doesn't seem like one thing has been sort of like juxtaposed on top of another. It's just,
I hope not. Thank you. I'm glad you thought. Yeah, I think that, you know, it's that thing of just like being honest to yourself as a musician. Like, and I love all this, you know, free jazz music and all this stuff kind of stuff, but it would be very artificial of me to just like, it still has to be connected to what your practice is as a musician, I think. And also, I think one thing that I've been loving in terms of the music listening, you know, when people think of a term like free jazz, you sort of imagine like the blistering saxophone and like crazy drums. But, you know, if you listen to actual records from that time, if you think about, you know, some of the later Albert Eiler records or Don Cherry or Pharoah Sanders, you know, there's incredible grooves on those albums. There's songs. There's an Ornette Coleman. There's a song on the Prince Street album where it's like a, you know, it's a folk song. It's kids singing a chant. And so many elements of those records were, you know, actually really beautiful and melodic and song-based. And so this album, in my own imagination, which whether somebody else hears it this way, it's totally, you don't have to, but in my imagination, it was sort of me trying to, you know, it's having into that feeling of like these very personal music records those guys were making without thinking about that kind of, that feeling, that energy doesn't have to mean white noise, you know, it can mean something else, it's whatever, you know.
So for you, what does The Following Mountain as a title refer to?
It's hard to describe, and there's some comics if anybody out there, you know, achieves communion with the physical copy of the record in some form, whether that's
what a Buddhist way of putting
CD
that.
Or vinyl or whatever, you know, it's a rare thing to do these days, but there are some cryptic comics in there that can lead you closer to the deep truth of The Following Mountain.
Okay. Sam Amidon is with us here in our studio. We are hearing some live music from the album, The Following Mountain. So let's hear another song. You want to do Another Story Told?
Sounds good.
All right. There's a little switch that happens in the middle of this song. So
let's see where it goes.
Watch and listen closely.
Another one gone, another story told. Another one gone, another story told. Another one gone, another story told. When things get another one gone, another story told. Another one, another one, another one, another one gone. Farewell, my friend. I'm
I'm traveling through the wilderness. Your company has been delightful. You who doth leave my mind distressed.
Sam Amidon and Gray McMurray on guitar. The song is called Another Story Told. You'll find it on Sam's newest album called The Following Mountain. And so there is still improvisation in the process of playing these songs as well.
Always.
Yeah. On the album, that song has a kind of a... The rhythm track has an almost like slow R&B feel.
Yeah, Shazad programmed this random beat and he put it down. And one thing that was beautiful, because the guitar part that you pick, it's like a little bit swung, but not completely. And Shazad put this little heartbeat into the beat where if you listen to the little hi-hats that are on the record, they sort of shuffle in and out. And that's a tribute to Milford as well, because Milford Graves, you know, his belief about percussion, one of his big beliefs about rhythm, he's like also a scientist, and he records people's heartbeats and analyzes the rhythms of the heartbeats. And I think one of his big beliefs is that, like, metronomic time is, you know, controlling.
Yeah.
And that we start as babies and children with the percussion sense that, like, a two-year-old has. It's super free and open, and that we lose that when we get older. And he's mastered all these old percussive rhythm forms, but he always wants to play it through the feeling of a heartbeat. And to me, that's a connection to the Kentucky Fiddle Tunes, where these mountain fiddlers have a very personal sense of time, and the beats flow and push and pull. And Shazad gave a little tribute even in his electronic beat.
Shazad Ismaili, Leo Abrahams, both really important to the kind of the production of this album. So I want to give credit where due to both of them, but it's very much a Sam Amidon album. And Sam, really, really well done.
Thank you.
You've been listening to an episode of the Soundcheck podcast from our archives. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our producer is Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. You can see and hear much more on our website. Check it out at newsounds.org.